So I have one motto in my life that has shown up in two critical moments as I was growing up. And I actually have the second version of this phrase tattooed on my body. And it says that no one fights alone.
Dear team, it is time for the first English episode in 2025, and this is a crazy story. Our new team member could not have been through more in terms of diseases, sicknesses, and medical struggles. She was told she might not be able to walk when she was a kid, and she went on to become a professional volleyball player. Total boss. She tells us all about her story, why she has a conflicted relationship with the sentence, "Everything happens for a reason," her head coach, which are books, which I love, as you can imagine, and literally so much more. She is super real, super relatable, honest, and incredibly sweet, so I hope each and every one of you can take something out of our conversation that inspires, helps you, or simply makes you feel good. And as always, please make sure to follow and subscribe the podcast and give us 5 stars if you feel like we deserve it. It helps a lot. And now, my dear team, get to know our lovely Crystal Rivers.
And it first showed up in my life as "You are not alone." When I was 13 or 14 years old, I went to a camp. I had a lot of medical issues as a child. And I went to a camp where there were 40, 50 other kids who had the same kind of issues as me. And this is the first time I realized, wow, I'm not alone in everything that I'm going through. And this followed me. And then when I got cancer, when I was 19 years old, this phrase showed up again because I realized how important it was to have community around me. And this phrase has been translated into all areas of my life, especially being an athlete, playing a team sport, and realizing that you need your community, you need people around you, and it's a great feeling to know that you're not fighting any kind of battle or any kind of obstacle alone.
That's crazy. Crystal, this literally just like went straight into my heart. This is beautiful. So you're really like drawing a lot of, I don't know, hope and strength and motivation from that thought, from that motto, yeah?
Yes, for sure. That's why I have it tattooed on me, because there were times in my life where I was like, yeah, I can get through these hard moments alone. And then I realized, I looked around me, and it had the first time was really, or one of the most powerful times was in college when I was going through chemo, and I looked around and there were 17 other girls, my teammates, that were there for me in every single moment. And I was like, wow, like, it's a beautiful thing to be able to push through and know that people are there on my side, and this could give me the push to push through chemo. Or that's a big thing that I hope, you know, people don't have to go through. But when I'm on the court, also when I'm playing volleyball and I have my teammates around me, to know like there's someone that has my back.
Oh man, this really does something to me right now, because I have to admit that I, like, let's say that's one of my red flags, that I always think I'm responsible for myself. I have to find the solutions. I have to, you know, I have to go through everything by myself. If there's someone by my side, that's fine, but I'm the one who has to figure it out, you know? So that's really special.
Yeah, I think it's a really special thing when you, like, when you realize that you don't have to do everything alone, because I'm the same. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm really independent. I'm going to do everything. And I have to remind myself, like, okay, just take a step back. You know, where's your support system? Where can you get some support? Who's around you? And I think when you can put those two things in balance, because there are some moments where you need to feel independent and feel powerful and that you can do things on your own. But when you can find those two things in balance and you know that no matter what, even if I do step out on my own and do something, I have people that are in my corner backing me. And so you never are truly doing something on your own.
Yeah, man. But like this whole thing of asking for help, you know, feeling vulnerable, feeling soft and maybe weak or whatever, and then, you know, making that step, asking for help, reaching out for others, that's really hard. I think that's really hard too.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. This is one thing I experienced, I would say, starting 3 years ago here with the volleyball club. It was when my health started to get, you know, a little bit worse. And I was still trying to push through and push through and push through. And, you know, my coaches, my teammates, my friends, they were like, "Crystal, like, you can take a day. You can stop practice early. Like, we see that you're pushing and you're fighting. Like, it's okay." And I really fought against it. I really fought against it. And eventually I started to realize, okay, it's better for everyone if I just ask for, okay, a little bit of help, and then making sure that the moments where I can show up, I show up in the best way. But it's definitely hard when you're used to being, like I said, independent and getting things done your way. So I think this is why it's like important to know, like, the people that are around you, like, are there, and like, you can trust them, and you can trust and rely on them for support.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, everything is resonating so much. Like, even this, you're pushing through. You're like, no, I can do this. Even though I'm feeling weak or my health is not at 100% right now, I can still go. I can still do one more practice. Or, yeah, like, you know, you can transfer this to any task that you're doing. I'm just staying one more day at the office. I'm just doing one more call. I'm just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why are we like that?
It's a question I ask myself so all the time. Because it's just like, you know, when I think about myself, or I think about like other like power, like women who I see around that are ambitious and have these goals, like, you don't want to be seen as weak. Like, we sometimes think, you know, like, oh, if I ask for help, like, I'm weak, or if I have to stop, like, oh, I'm giving up, I'm weak. And it's like, no, like, this is why I say it's important to find this balance and making sure that you are in an environment, which, you know, I've been fortunate to be in that environment. Everyone isn't fortunate enough to be in an environment where they can ask for help and they can build a support system. But I've been fortunate enough to be in this type of environment. And I realized that, no, I'm not weak. Like, I'm actually stronger, because I said, I can't give it my all 100% of the time. But when I am there, when I am able to, I'm giving everything I have. And this was enough for the people that are around me. And so I was also fortunate to have those people around me to change this mindset of like, oh, like, am I weak for like doing this? And it's like, no, actually, I feel stronger.
Oh, man, that's deep, man. Yeah, we really dove right to right into the conversation. But I really love and appreciate you being so open straight away. For everyone who doesn't know yet who Crystal Rivers is, let's take a second here and let's introduce you properly. And actually, in my podcast, I'm always, you know, passing the ball over to you and have my team members, how I'm calling my guests, introduce themselves, kind of like they would on a FIFA card, for example. Like, what are the facts that we need to know about Crystal Rivers?
Yes, as I joined Team Lisa.
Yay!
Yeah, so as you said, my name is Crystal Rivers. I'm from the United States. I play volleyball, professional volleyball, and I've been playing professionally. This is my 8th year playing. I played one season in France, and then since then, I've been playing in Stuttgart for Allianz MT5 Stuttgart. And since my time here, we've won, let's see, four championships, two German Cups, two German Super Cups, and a couple of other runner-up finishes. So I've enjoyed a lot of success here. I feel at home here. And yeah, that's a big part of who I am.
That is a big part of who you are, for sure. And I'm happy to, go into more detail in just a second. But you did drop a couple bits and pieces in the very beginning. You mentioned a couple of, diseases that started out life for you, really.
Yeah.
And I would love to talk about those as well, if that's fine for you, because I feel like that's really shaped you as a person as well, or I'm imagining it must have, because that's really how, life started for you, right?
Yeah.
Tough.
From day one, I was born with some pretty severe birth defects. The doctors weren't even sure if I would live. But fortunately, thankfully, I'm here.
Yes. Yes.
And this also turned into at one point that maybe I would never be able to walk. And so I think you also asked me like a few minutes ago, like, why are we like this, that we just kind of want to push through things? And this is what people often ask me when they hear this about me, that like, I was not supposed to walk and now I'm playing professional volleyball. And I always say, for whatever reason, it was in me from day mm-hmm. one that I was going to overcome these things. And this is why I say also, I'm not just a volleyball player. I've been a fighter my whole life, getting through those things. And these are birth defects that will continue to follow me my whole life. As I mentioned before, also, I've had issues in the last years with my health. Going back, first off, 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm-hmm. This was separate from those birth defects, but they're a part of the whole story that, my life has been a lot of these medical issues. And last summer, I also had a surgery. Probably, I lost count of the number of surgeries, but it's definitely mm-hmm. in the teens to teens. I had an 8-hour surgery. And luckily I've recovered and I'm still playing the season here at volleyball. But yeah, I think that sums it up. I can talk for hours mm-hmm. about all the medical things I have, but that sums it up, that I had these birth defects. It was a scary beginning for my family, to know, maybe she doesn't make it. Maybe she doesn't walk. And to look back and know that, I did overcome all of these things to reach the point that I am at now.
Which is crazy, and a really long path that you already walked. And I was wondering, as I was, doing my research and writing down the things I want to know from you, I was just reminiscing a little bit about how people react to whatever predicaments any of us have, not even comparable to what you've been going through. But there's always this, it's good for something. There's a reason. Everything has a reason. What do you think about this sentence? Do you think that all this shit that you had to go through to just live a normal life, to just do what you're feeling like what you're meant to be and do, that you had to have it this hard?
I have a complicated relationship with that phrase.
mm-hmm. Because this,
me. This was all I heard, as you said, it's your, this battle was given to you to make you a warrior, to make you strong. And I'm like, I would have chosen something else.
Right. Or people say you get these challenges because you're so strong, yeah. because you can accomplish them, or you can make it. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll be honest. I have those days where I'm like, I wish I wasn't the strong person. I wish I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I say complicated because obviously these struggles and things I've had, they've made me who I am today. And it's hard. Life was hard growing up. Life is hard now with all of these things. And I think at some point it can be a bit irresponsible to kind of say but you made it. You're strong. You can get through anything and all these things. And it's like, I did what I knew. I lived my life how I knew to live it. And that was to go through and push through these things. And I was fortunate enough that I was able to get through them. But it's not, but I would never say, oh, I want to give this to someone else just to teach them how to get through obstacles or, you know, because this is how this can somehow turn sometimes. It's just like, oh, you know, like you, it's for a reason. Like it's all good. Like these things are going to work out. And I do believe like, you know, like there have been certain moments in my life where I'm like, I am here for a reason. I believe I'm in Stuttgart, you know, for a reason. When I talk about this surgery.
Of all places in the world, by the way, right? Yeah. You're from Alabama in the States, ending up in freaking Stuttgart.
Yeah, and I think I'm here for a reason. And like, it's crazy. So the surgery that I had this past summer, the doctor that did it, he was my surgeon in Alabama when I was young.
In Germany?
Yes.
He got the surgery in Germany?
He's German. When I was in Alabama, I'll never forget this.
That's wild. That's odd.
His name is Dr. Moonsterer, and no one could say this, so they called him Dr. Monster. So I would go to Dr. Monster when I was a little girl.
Oh my God. Great framing for kids, yeah.
And he did a couple of my surgeries there. And, you know, he didn't do my last major surgery in Alabama, but after this last major surgery in Alabama, I was pretty much okay. And then when I got to Stuttgart, I started to have a lot of other problems. And it got to the point where last summer, I think I went to two doctors and they were like, this is too complicated for me. And one, I was even under anesthesia and they woke me up. And like, I really respect that because maybe they could have messed something up, but he woke me up and said, it's too complicated.
Wow. But that's big and scary.
And then I called my nurse from the US because I had called a couple of times and asked, you know, can you guys help me? Or like, what do you guys think? And they were like, oh, like just trust the doctors there. And I said, look, you have to help me. And she said, oh, you know, Dr. Mustafa, like he's over there. I think it's close to Stuttgart. Is it Munich? And I was like, I looked it up. Yes, he's in Munich and he is the head of pediatric surgery at the LMU Klinikum in Munich. And he's doing great things in the world of like pediatric surgery. And so I contacted him and yeah, I had my surgery at the pediatric hospital. they're like, who's your kid? Who's the
patient?
Did
he recognize you too?
Yeah. He remembered me.
That's wild. Oh my. And you know, again, going through your story, going through everything, and, you know, I'm not trying to make this about myself, just I grew up with certain circumstances as well that made me spend a lot of time with doctors and in hospitals as well. And I was wondering if that maybe resonates with you, but, you know, it kind of became a routine too.
Yeah.
It kind of became part of everyday life. Like I still had a lot of friends and I played field hockey my whole life, so I had that part as well, great hobby, blah blah blah, but those, you know, visits really became part of everyday life too. How are they for you?
Yeah, for sure. It became definitely a part of everyday life. And for me, there was a few years in a row where every summer I had some kind of surgery. So it was like my summer was going to be that I have surgery. And I have to go to this doctor's appointment. And I don't know, in some ways in my brain, also like the hospital kind of became like a home for me. Like when I would go see the doctors there and everything. It's interesting now as an adult because I've had to go to a few like doctor's appointments a lot here as well. And like, I have my team doctors that have been great and, have great relationship with one of them. But then sometimes I go to the doctor now and I look around and I'm like, because now I'm like, I'm the young one. And normally, cause you know, like, okay, there's tons of people with health issues, but usually it's like typically older people that are there or more mature people that are there. And I think to myself, like, wow, this has really been my routine for like my entire life. And like, I think like, it's right. Sometimes I look and I'm like, maybe they're just here because, you know, like they've reached an age where they have to do this yearly appointment. But for me, I've been doing this the whole time and it's just normal. Or I'll say things to my friends and I'm like, I have to remember, oh, they probably haven't experienced that. Like, like having to go so much to the doctor, you know?
And it makes you mature and grow up so much faster, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because like even mentally as a young girl, you think of so many things that like girls, I feel like should not be confronted with. Like, I feel like your thoughts go so much further and so much deeper because there's just so much happening with your body as you're developing, as you're trying to understand the world and like life.
Yes, this for sure. Like, it gets so complicated because, like you said, like I think about like myself, and like you said, like you were growing up, you were also there a lot. Like from a young age, think about how many kind of phases you go through, like, and then as a woman, right? Like developing. And I remember after I had a major surgery, I think I was in the 10th grade, so I was around 15 or 16. And that time, because normally I had my surgeries in the summer, but this time I had to have it during school, and I missed a month of school. And I come back, and from my perspective, like, I was okay, like I could walk and stuff, but I'll never forget, like, people like were looking at me like, whoa, like, because I was walking a little bit slower or not moving as well. And this also was like kind of puts things in perspective for me. I was like, I have to remember that people, just everyday average people, don't go through this. My friends, yeah. They don't, because some of my friends came to the hospital that time to see me, and they really couldn't handle it. Because even though, like, I for myself, I was, oh, I'm great, I'm sitting up, and like they couldn't handle it, you know. So yeah. I fully think about that sometimes. I'm like, wow, like, I have to remember I've lived a completely, like, I don't say that to take away from anyone else's story, because everyone has their own story and has their own things in life.
No.
You know? But it's just like, wow, like, there are so many things I've been exposed to that the average, like, even at 30, the average 30-year-old hasn't been exposed to.
Yeah, and this being exposed to certain things, I feel like that's crazy too, because like your relationship with your body changes. Mm-hmm. You have to give up your privacy. You have to give up, I guess, shame or being, I don't know, shy. You can't afford that. You have to be all out there if you want to, you know, find a solution for what's up. And those were heavy, heavy diseases you've been going through.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, you know, like my parents, like they were always around, and like they were always taking me to the doctor. But from a young age, I kind of became also the one who kind of, and like, I appreciate my doctors because they always spoke to me and they included me whenever decisions were being made. So I really appreciate them. But it really turned into me being the one kind of also making decisions for myself from a young age based on what they were telling me. And so I really, like you said, I had to mature a lot. Yeah.
Wow.
And I had to understand also, like, even with the changes, that there were certain things that, like, of course, like, my doctors, this I also appreciate, they always said, do whatever you can. Like, we know you have the back issues, but you do as much as you can. Whatever you feel like you can do, you do. But at a young age, there were also some things that I couldn't, because like with my issues, maybe I couldn't go to this sleepover because with my friends, because I had to take care of this, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like that still shapes you, or that's still present for you sometimes today?
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting. Especially to a specific point of like still being able to say to my friends, oh, maybe I can't come, because people, my friends, even the ones that know me intimately and they know the deeper parts of it, sometimes they'll say things or they'll forget that I'm not quote unquote like normal person. I'm like, this doesn't work for me. Like, I have to do like my medical procedure because there are some things I have to do at home. And I'm like, they're my friends are great. Like, they understand I need my space or I need my time with my medical things. But there are just certain moments where they're like, I'm like, hey, gosh, remember, like, I'm not like quote unquote normal. And they're like, no, everything's fine. I'm like, I know what you're trying to say, but there are things that I have to take care of.
How does your whole story, let's say story, and put this whole situation into just this one word, affect you as the athlete that you are today? Or does it not? I hope it doesn't, but I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, it for sure affects me as an athlete in a number of different ways. I mean, there's a side of, you know, as I spoke earlier, the no one fights alone and the pushing and being told from a young age from the doctors, you do whatever you think you can do. And then like me saying, I'm going to run, I'm going to jump, I'm going to be the strongest, all of these things. But on the day to day, it also affects my life because there are certain medical things I have to do every morning and every night. I have to wear an ostomy bag. I have a urostomy bag. And this I have to change every day. I have to take care to make sure that I guess it doesn't leak or break when I'm playing. Luckily, this hasn't happened in years.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there are certain things that I do have to take care of on a daily basis. And this is why I also say, you know, there was a time where I was afraid to ask for certain things, but it got to a point where I needed to ask, for example, after the games that when we travel, that I need a moment for myself to kind of regulate my medical situation before we travel back. And I've been really fortunate that the teams we've had here, the coaches, the management, the staff have been really accommodating to me so that I feel comfortable. And this is this whole like accessibility topic for people who have any type of medical issue.
Yeah, man. And I'm just thinking, getting all these repeated diagnoses year after year after year, you know, every summer there would be another surgery. Would you say that you ever had a point where you're like, fuck, I just can't anymore? Or was it, you know, this level of normal that you would just be like, okay, it's another summer appointment?
Yeah, I've definitely had those moments where you just want to give up, or you just want to say like, enough is enough. Yeah. And you have those days. And for me, I remember, I'm thinking now back to when I was on chemo, I had cancer. And I think the whole time, like, I think I cried like three or four times during the whole process. And I remember telling myself, okay, Crystal, get it out, let it out. And then after, you keep going. And this kind of follows me to this day where I'm like, and now it's a bit more complicated and I have ways to kind of take care of myself when these kind of emotions come up. But whenever I feel this moment come in, I'm saying, okay, you're human, you have emotions, let it be. Because it is a lot. I live a different life than the average 30-year-old. Like I need to just be like, oh my gosh, like, and sometimes I tell myself, okay, why can't it be this way? And I know I can't change it, but sometimes I need to think that. And then I say, let's voice these feelings because I need to get them out. And then I keep moving because I am me. And these things have shaped me. I have these feelings, but I'm going to keep going.
Would you say that you've developed certain beliefs, certain phrases over these years that, you know, keep you moving, or, you know, in a weak moment where you want to give up, you're like, nope. We know better than that.
This is actually the first one that came to mind. It's a funny story. I was playing in France and I was going through a really bad period with my mental health. Mm-hmm. And I had started.
I mean, the stuff that everyone has too, right? Yeah.
And I started playing not so good. Like it was, we were having a great season until that point. And we were still managing to win, but I was getting really, it was my first time playing professionally. And I'll never forget my sport director texting me at almost midnight, can you come to my office tomorrow? And that was it. And I was like, oh man, I was like, shit.
I would be scared. I'd be like, no, we're having this call right now because I will not be able to sleep. Oh my, horrible. Horrible.
And then the next day I found out he also texted my setter. So then we both went and we're like, oh, we're about to get yelled at. Like he's about to fire us. Like it's going to be terrible. And I go there and he's this like French guy. I think he had his own architecture business. So I was at his office and he called me there. You know what he called me there to tell me? He called me there to tell me, Crystal, I believe in you.
Oh my God, I'm crying. Yeah.
And it was really cute because she struggled to find the words in English. And so he really was like, and so as he was trying to find the words, I could really see and feel that he believed in me. And one of the things that I started doing to kind of come out of this like funk, this this mental, like, kind of down period, I was journaling.
Struggle, yeah.
Yeah, and I started writing at the first page of every journal, DTA believes in you. And I kid you not, I think 3 weeks ago, I have a whiteboard above my desk. It was written there, DTA believes in you. That has stuck with me because I don't know how I would have managed to finish that season. We ended up winning the first championship for the club after this.
Ah, that's crazy. Man, and you know, as little as the situation might seem, like how deep words can go and how much they can mean to other people.
Yes, and it's really stuck with me. It kind of put it in perspective for me about, like, you know, why I am choosing to play and why I'm choosing to push. And another situation happened a couple of weeks ago. Dr. Munsterer came to a game for the first time, and I didn't know he was coming. And I've been also struggling a bit this season. And I looked into the crowd and I saw him. And I just thought to myself, this is the first time he's seen me play, and he's seen the girl that he just operated on this summer. And this is why I do it. And then on top of that, I start to think, like, this is also why I started sharing my story, you know, because I'm naturally a very private person. I'm super introverted. I people will tell you that when they first meet me, like, it takes a while for me to open up. But then I said, you know what? I have this story. I think about when I was writing, doing my book, I thought about, you know, like Little Crystal. Like, I'm doing this for Little Crystal, and I'm doing it for all the other little girls out there, and little children, little boys, whoever, that, you know, need this more kind of motivation and need to see someone going through these things, because this goes back to that you are not alone.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, how crazy it must be to see Dr. Monster in the stands and, like, vice versa, right? Yeah. He must be like, oh my God, what I'm doing actually has purpose, and it's actually changing people's lives and making a difference. Tell me more about the book, though. It's called The Doctors Told Me I Was Never Gonna Walk, So I Decided to Jump. Love the title. Great work. Did you do this, or did you have help? How did the whole book idea start, and how did it come together?
So the book idea was first presented to me, I want to say, almost 3 years ago. And when it first came, I immediately said no.
Oh, really?
I said immediately no. Because really...
Wait, who did come up to you?
So,
who presented the
idea? So my sport director, Kim Rankema, she's been at the club since I've been here, and she was a player here before. And she was always, I guess, she was always impressed by my story. And she also wrote the foreword to the book. And she said, yes, you want to reach out to me? And she says, I know you're a private person, but I'm going to ask anyway. And then I think she asked me a second time, and I said, I don't know. And then I had done an article with the journalist, Matthias Schmidt. And he ended up writing me, because he was the one that had contact with Kim. And he said, hey, like, a book agent reached out to me. Like, can we sit down and talk? I think this could be something really cool. And when I sat down to talk with him and we started outlining what the book could look like, what I felt was, because I've shared my story at times in the past. I did like a kind of a commercial with that aired on ESPN in the US when I was in college.
Oh, wow.
And I felt like, yes, people were interested in sharing my story, but it was more so, it wasn't authentic. And when I sat down with my...
How so?
In the way that, like, I don't want to call anybody out, you know, but, like, there was one producer that I you know, did my story. And it was just, like, did it. And then I never heard anything back from her, or never... It wasn't about connecting. It was about, like, let's just put this out there. And...
It was about headlines.
Yeah. Yes. And... When I sat down with Matthias, like, of course, like, it's always going to be, if you write a book, like, we're selling a book, it's always going to be a bit about, like, you know, like, the headline and, like, these things, you know? But when I sat down with him...
Obviously.
When I sat down with him, it just felt authentic that he really believed in my story, and he wanted to take the time to make sure that it was told in the correct way. And I said, this is what I want. This is how I want it to be done. I'm in. And then we started the process. It's really funny because everyone asks, like, the book is written in German.
Yeah, right. Remember, I texted you, I DM'd you in German because I was suggesting that you're fluent and you were answering in English, responding in English, like, might not be enough for a full German podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in my German lessons and I'm trying and everything.
One day, but it's such a crazy language to learn, so don't bother.
No, I've said it's on my list of goals this year to speak more, and it's one thing I want to challenge myself to do because I've been here. I have the book in German, and how we ended up doing the book was that I told my story in like voice notes, and Matthias he did a great job. He was really asking questions to clarify and like really just great to work with. And he wrote everything. And then the book agent, we ended up with a publishing company, Complete Media, that also does a lot to focus on women and, focus on stories, from women's empowerment. And these things all together, just mix together to create something beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you then to have the final finished product in your hand in German, sharing it? Because, you know, speaking about giving up privacy, kind of the whole control over your body, having to forget about feeling shy or whatever, that's kind of what you're doing there too. You're stripping away everything and showing everything, really.
I remember before the book came out, I booked myself a little wellness weekend because I said, let's get away because I was so nervous and so just, And then the book came out and I was just like giddy with excitement. I remember we were we were on the train ride to Paris with the teams. We had some friendly matches and I was just giddy with excitement because I was like, finally, it's there. It's out. Of course, before that, I had it in my hands, and this was also a great feeling. But when it came out, it was great. And then when the first people that were coming up to me were fans from the team. And when they came up to me to talk to me about the impact that it had on them, I was like, this is why I chose to do it. And also why it made sense to do it in German and for it to come out here. Because, in the future, I can do whatever in English and continue working with my life has been here the past few years, and kind of the most pivotal moment, this last surgery I had, has happened here. And the fans have watched and they've wondered years, that I'm not at some games or I was sick and I couldn't be there. I couldn't do these things. And now they get to see kind of the full picture of who I am. And so I think that this was a beautiful thing for me to experience.
Look, and this is so interesting right now because we've been only talking about this one part of your life, like this one path, which is hospital and fight and struggle and disease and sickness. But on the other hand, everyone that you've just described, who was basically the audience for this book, is everyone who knows you as Crystal the athlete.
Yes.
What role would you say does, this other path, the second road sports play for you, or has played for you in your entire life? Was it always your dream also to be like push through and fight in order to become an athlete, or did that just kind of happen along the way?
It just happened along the way, actually. I mean, okay, I was always around sports. I have a brother, he's 2 years older than me, and he was always playing sports. He played sports in college as well. Now he's coaching. My dad played
what sport?
American football and baseball. Mm. My dad played baseball and he played until little rec leagues around until he was 50. So I was always in a ballpark and I was always trying to outrun and outplay the boys. And like, my mom would be like, watch out your back. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to jump and run harder and faster than anyone else around. But the volleyball story is interesting because I didn't start with volleyball until I was almost 17. And
which is late. Yes.
Because I was playing tennis and I was interested in volleyball, but I love tennis. And my first year of high school, I missed a tryout. The second year of high school, I had this major surgery. And actually my third year, I also missed a tryout for volleyball. And they ended up having a second tryout.
Okay.
And so then I made the team and they were like, whoa, this girl can jump. And then I had no aspirations after this. I just wanted to play tennis, but then my tennis coach quit.
And so your career was over, obviously, because that's how it goes.
Yeah, and so then volleyball was there. And it's also interesting because my whole life, I was more academic. I always had my head in the book. Besides a brief period in middle school where my head was not on straight and I wasn't focused on school. My test scores were great, but my grades weren't. I was a straight A student and I was fortunate enough to get full scholarships to a number of universities for academics. And this helped me because I started volleyball so late, there were less opportunities to get money to go to college because my family couldn't afford to pay for me to go to college. So I had to earn a scholarship. And so I was really more academic minded. And it just happened that I was good at volleyball. And as I realized I was good, I started...
Interesting.
Yeah. And I will say that I am the type of person that if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it fully. So it's not that I was just there to play around. Like, even though the volleyball was my aspiration, I remember in high school, I knew my senior year was coming up and then I was going to be a starter on varsity. I was every day in the gym hitting against the wall. Because I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it well. And so same thing with volleyball in college. I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it well. And I got better and better. And I was like, okay, I can do this. Then I found out about being able to play overseas. And still, even then, I was like, I just want to go travel the world. If I don't play volleyball overseas, I'll go to Spain. I'll teach English. Like, I just want to be in Europe. And it just happened that I just kept getting better and better and realizing that, oh, I can do something with volleyball. And, you know, I found my purpose in volleyball, and that's why I have played. And so now, and also, you know, why I have wanted to come here and like fight for championships in Germany. So I found that. But since you asked about the journey and the path was a bit all over the place at times.
It's interesting to hear you say, I found my purpose in volleyball. Can you put your purpose in actual words into like a phrase?
Oh,
you don't have to. I was just thinking because you sounded so clear and so straight and so, sure about it.
Yeah, it's really hard to put into words because like
it is
I think there's
hard.
So That's... many things that kind of come into it, you know, and that I can put into it. Yeah.
Don't worry about it. You found it in volleyball. That's what we know. We can slowly but surely move on into the second part of our conversation here and have a look at our categories. You can pick whichever little bubble that you would like to start with.
Okay, the middle one.
Let's go with the middle one. Okay, so this is the category called shootout.
Okay.
That's a little like rapid fire number of questions that I prepared. You can answer briefly or elaborate. We don't have to rush. You can't keep it short. You choose.
Okay.
And actually the first one you already answered. Extrovert or introvert?
Introvert.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you seem bubbly. You can talk very well. How do you feel that you're still on the introvert side?
I think I'm still on the introverted side because I can do this. I can be extroverted, but the energy that it takes out of me.
Because
people are surprised when I say I'm an introvert still sometimes, but then trust me, I'm the person that give me a book, I will be on the couch. Or if I don't have to talk, I won't do it. But I think, because of like who I am, the people I'm around, like I have to be extroverted. But I tell my friends, we joke. They'll joke with me. If they ask me to do kind of two events in a day, they're like, oh, no, wait, sorry, only one event. One event and that's it.
Oh, my God, that's actually funny. My friend, I would say the same thing about myself. And my friend's sister asked her the other day, oh, my God, was Lisa at that event? And she's like, that's like past 11 p.m. 100% she was not there. And it was right for exactly that reason. Like after 11 p.m., I'm not talking to anyone anymore. Oh, nice one. Second one. What's your favorite book?
Oh,
You can say any good one as well. No pressure. Yeah. I will not make sure that this is your favorite one.
You know what's funny? I saw the other day, it was like a post that was, because my favorite book is The Giver by Lois Lowry. And somebody was like,
I don't know it.
Someone was like, if you're an adult and your favorite book is still The Giver, like there's an issue there. Because I read it when I was young. And I still go back and read it every couple of years. But it's just like this dystopian novel. But it has some good themes, some really great themes in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I wrote it down. I'll definitely go check it out. I've never heard of it. I guess I should have, but well, you're never done learning, huh? Are you going to stay forever in Stuttgart, or is there maybe another stop in your career in sight?
For volleyball, there's...
Volleyball, yeah.
There's probably no other stop. But as far as like starting the next chapter of my life, definitely want to start in Stuttgart.
Cool. Yeah. All right. That's still so funny that like you're ending up in Stuttgart of all cities in Germany too. Next one, writing a book or giving interviews?
Oh, that's a good one.
Ooh.
Can I say both?
Of course you can. No pressure tonight. So there are bits and pieces of both processes that...
Yeah, because like, I like the spontaneity of like interviews, but then writing the book, like, I don't know, like you... Like for me, going on the journey of like going back throughout my life, like I was reminded of so many things and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went like really deep and you start to really remember like a lot of things in different ways. And then talking to people in your life, like about how they viewed it, like on a deeper level it was just really like an interesting journey for me.
Yeah, I can imagine for sure. Nice one. Is there, against all odds, even a positive memory though, when thinking back to your weeks and months at the hospitals?
Actually, there's a lot of positive memories. Like, it's like I said earlier, like, the hospital kind of became home to me. Like, even when I go to a new one, I'm like, oh, this feels natural. and so, I don't know, I think, especially when I was... still going to Children's Hospital in Alabama, my aunt worked nearby and she would always come by and like the first day, cause like there would be times where I couldn't eat for a week. And then she would always bring me like, they sneak me like a little bit of like McDonald's fry. So that's aww, a fond memory cranny that I have. Yeah.
That's so sweet. I love it. Yeah. Grandma's for the win. They're always the best. Oh, I love that. Like a little fry. Crystal, what is your favorite volleyball moment? I know it's always a tough one.
I still, you know, we've had a lot of good moments here in Stuttgart, but I still go back to my first season and winning the championship. It was the first championship for the club. I think maybe it was the fifth try because they had been to the finals a few times and they had won a couple of like the German Cup, but never the championship. And I remember I had a couple of teammates. We had a lot of girls retire after that season. And It was also, I think, like a lot of them, like their fifth year. We played 5 games. It was the fifth final. It had been like a really tough battle. And when we won, I got the game-winning kill. And like I still remember it to this day. I hit a ball and the defense went to the ceiling. And that the point ended. And there's this feeling of like, finally doing it. And like this was my first year with the team, but the girls who had been here like really like brought us in and they made us believe mm-hmm. in what they had done and like winning for them. This for me was just beautiful. And of course we built on that success after and those moments are great, but like that was the start, you know.
I love that. Yes. And it's funny that you're saying that or like referring to like a point way back in time, because this morning I was watching like Instagram reels mm-hmm. and it showed I'm not sure who played, but it was like a college basketball girls match. And again, I don't know who played, White won. And it was just like, they were the underdogs and they made that game winning point and everyone just lost it. And I was, you know, transferred back into my times as a youth player even. Yeah. And it's just like, nothing compares to this. You were young, you were this close group of, you know, mm-hmm. friends that we thought we would be forever. And it was just so carefree and so real and so authentic. And I mean, you went on to become a pro player, pro athlete, yeah. which is different. But, it, you know, this feeling never really goes away. Yeah. It's a good one. And the last rapid fire question, what would be the top one sport after volleyball, if you had to choose?
Tennis.
Oh, still?
Yes. I
stuck with you forever.
I
huh?
always say, like, the moment I'm done, like, retiring from volleyball, I'm back on the tennis court.
That's so cool. Yeah. Have you ever tried, like, the squash or pickleball or paddle?
I've tried squash.
Alternatives?
I've tried paddle. Pickleball, no.
Okay.
Yeah. I really like...
I mean, that's... The American yeah. version, yeah. kind of, right?
And I'm kind of, I'm barely in America, so, yeah.
Fair. All right, we got two more categories to go, though. Which one will be next?
Your left hand.
My left yes. hand. I am interested what you will tell us about this one. It's the category called mm-hmm. head coach. And I'm always asking my team members in this one to, like, think to either one special moment of your life in this case where you really were struggling and one person or one activity or one thing really brought you out of this, or if you have someone who is acting like a head coach for you in your life consistently.
Wow.
And I mean, let me help you. We had girls who were like, running as my head coach. That's when I get this going. A lot of people have their parents as their head coach. Some people have actual coaches in their lives. You know, it can be anything. You can be creative.
Okay. I'm going to say, because then I can also make an analogy with the sport, because my therapist
yes,
was my head
yes.
coach. Because... after I finished chemo, I started to have really bad anxiety issues. I had to take medication and everything.
Wow.
And it was my first time going to therapy. And I remember going there. And they said that it was basically kind of, it wasn't PTSD, but like it was the same kind of thing after going through the chemo and just kind of pushing through that this anxiety came up and I was having panic attacks.
Wow.
And I remember being in therapy and I'm telling her the things I had done to cope, like, throughout my life. And she really was like, I don't know how you've never been to therapy and like how you're managing. Cause I didn't have access to it, but she was like, everything you're doing or have done are things that I, as a therapist, would have told you to do. The only thing was, it wasn't help working anymore.
No way.
Yeah, and so then we found new...
So you were your own head coach,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. So then we found... or actually, I can say the books were, because I to this day believe that because I read so much and so many different things, that this is where I picked, up these kind of techniques to help myself. So books could also be my head coach, but,
yeah, I love it.
Yeah. With my therapist, we kind of realized, what were my triggers, and we developed like things to help me, like journaling, meditation, yoga. So she kind of gave me the playbook.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. If you say, so many books are there that you read that really helped you? Do you have a couple of them at the top of your mind, at the top of your head, that you could share right now? Because I love everything that, you know, is self-help, self-development, and a little bit deeper.
Yeah. Okay. When I was younger, what I read a lot were kind of like these coming of age novels. The one that just popped in my brain, I don't even remember what it was about, but I think it was like, Are You Dare God? It's Me, Margaret. And it was about a girl going through like puberty and like what's happening to my body and like figuring and also like fighting with her parents and stuff. But lately I've been reading a lot of Malcolm Gladwell, and it's this kind of theme. Are you familiar with him? Yes. Yeah, I'm reading a lot of Malcolm Gladwell, and like now actually I'm reading Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And I'm loving it because I'm reading it like in little chunks.
Yeah, it's pretty dense, right? Yeah. You can't like just read it away. You need all like the full brain.
Yeah. So those for me are kind of like, especially like Malcolm Gladwell, kind of like the kind of self-help part for me. Because where I found self-help growing up was kind of like these kind of coming of age novels. But then also like we had this series called Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul, Chicken Soup for the Soul. And it's just stories that like the ones I read that women would send in about their life.
Yeah, that you could relate with.
Yeah.
That would guide you gently.
Yes.
Interesting. That's really cool. Yeah, man, books is a really great head coach too.
Yes, for sure. Like this is one thing I'm really like fortunate. My mom, we were at the library like 2 or 3 times a week. And and I never realized like how much like, so when I was in college, I was taking a women's studies class and we did a privilege walk. And I remember thinking, oh man, we're about to do this. Like I'm in the Southern United States. I'm a woman, I'm black. My family, we didn't have a lot of money. Like I was like, I'm for sure going to be at the back of the line. And I don't remember all of the questions, but I remember her asking, one of the questions was like, did you have books in your home? And I could take a step forward and I was like, wow, that really is a privilege. And then mine was even more that my mom was always going to the library with me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm so fortunate for that.
Oh, that's so sweet, man. Those privilege walks. That's crazy that you actually did those.
Yeah.
How was that? I mean, just like listening to you saying that right now, I'm definitely going to be at the back of the line. Yeah. That's horrible. What a stress.
Yeah. Because, I don't remember in some of the questions, but like, I think like, you know, cause when we were in class, there's me there. And then of course, like there's like white men, white women, other black men, and then other ethnicities and everything. And so some of the questions were based on your ethnicity or based on, you know, have you ever experienced certain things? And then you just, but I enjoyed the exercise because at the end everyone stands where they are and you look around and you see, okay, where is everyone? And you kind of like start to dissect the different points of, like for me, like the one point for me was I took a step because I had books in my home and there were a couple people that didn't. And I was like, wow, like that's like eye opening because for me, like my world was books and like I can't imagine a world of not having one.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's wild. Oh my God. I love the head coach as books because I mean, you've definitely experienced this too. Like sometimes if you're reading a hard book, that's actually like asking challenging questions. Mm-hmm. If you're sitting in the comfort of your home by yourself, no judgment, no other influence, it's like such an interesting like development you can go through if you're actually being called out because it's, you know, you're safe. Yeah. You can be like, oh my God, I'm doing these mistakes or I'm actually on the bad side of things or I'm actually not, you know, whatever. And you can like reflect so much better. If there's no judgment, if you don't have to react to anything or questions or don't have to put anything into words, you can just let it sink in and let like the thought grow. Mm-hmm. Oh, books are the best. But listen, Crystal, one more category and it's the Einwurf, which is the topic that you brought for us today. What did you bring?
Okay, actually, now I feel a bit bad because we've touched on this topic a lot.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Whatever, let's just repeat it. It's okay.
Because I wanted to speak about mental health in general. Because I think, you know, like we've reached a point where it is talked about a lot more in society. It's talked about a lot more by athletes now. And I think this is a great thing, but I think for me, the things that I've experienced, the things I've been told. A couple of years ago, I had someone come up to me to ask some advice and about just like a life situation. And I remember that they questioned me and they said, yeah, but like, you can't have like any mental health struggle. Like you've been through like so much and you're always going through. Like what do you mean?
You're strong. You know, yeah. You know what it takes. You have all the answers.
And I was like, excuse me. Like,
no.
Like I've also had to reach a point. Like I said, I went to therapy. Like I had to take medication for the panic attacks. And the goal was that I wasn't going to stay on it. And like, I found things that worked for me that I don't have to. But even this, like people, there's still this stigma around having to take medication. Even though it's an illness like any other thing. And sometimes you need it. And I was fortunate that I needed it short term because I worked on the other parts. But I think this idea that like, yes, like I can say to you, I am a strong woman. I have been through a lot. I have this story. I've built this life, this volleyball career. Yes. But I can also...
I love your body language too, saying it. Bless you. Yes.
But I can also say that I've had moments where I couldn't have this body language. And I've worked hard to be able to have it because I addressed my mental health and I realized that this was just as important as my physical health.
Yes.
And I think that we need to always be thinking of this, especially when we look at athletes, especially when we look at people who are in front of us and like going through and like performing all the time and trying and like have this this kind of pressure to be the best all the time. Because at the end of the day, we're all human. We have emotions and we need to feel free to be able to express them.
100%. And my God, Crystal, the things that you can uncover and discover while starting this journey with a therapist, like you mentioned triggers earlier, mm-hmm. like why do we have triggers? And, it, you know, triggers don't have to trigger panic attacks. It can trigger defensive behavior in a seemingly normal conversation. All this can, you know, have a cause mm-hmm. that's way back and that we can only find out about and like learn about and deal with if we're actually going where it's uncomfortable to go with a therapist, for example.
Exactly.
So how would you say has this journey been for you? Are you still working with someone today?
No, I completed therapy. I always laugh when I say this because this is really how it went for me. My therapist was like, I don't think you need me anymore. So we had to break up.
That's great, though. That's the breakup you want.
Yeah.
The only.
But I every day use the tools that I learned. And all the time, I'm like, not all the time, but like every few months, I really take time to reevaluate. Like, okay, what's happening? How am I feeling? Do I need to call my therapist? Do I need to go back? Because she trusted me enough and built enough trust with me that she felt that I had learned enough that like I could kind of get through things. But I also recognized the importance of, as we spoke before, saying, okay, do I need help now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think,
yeah.
And like, I built also my support system where we all speak openly about like our therapists or like these things. And they also check in and evaluate with me and see like, okay, how are you feeling? Do you think you need to talk to your therapist again? Or is it enough to speak with us? And this is, it's a beautiful thing when you can build this environment, when you're fortunate enough to have that. Because the things that I learned in therapy, of course, are sticking with me. The routines, the journal, even writing this DJ Believes in You, like all of these things stick with me.
Yeah.
And right now I feel like, you know, in good balance, but I know that life isn't easy mm-hmm. and it's easy to get out of balance. And I have her number, my therapist's number, whatever I need.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. And you basically just drew the perfect circle because you brought us back to the beginning of the conversation, coming back to, you're not alone. And actually, we've reached the end of our conversation here too. I'm sure we could go on forever. Like, this is so, this is giving. The conversation is giving,
yes,
really.
It's
but
giving.
Crystal, first of all, thank you so much for being so open, even though you're introvert, for sharing so, you know, authentically and openly and honest and genuinely your story with us here. It really means a lot. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you for allowing me to be a part of Team Lisa, for having me.
Yeah, you're sweet. And now you may close this episode the way that every single team member gets to do it, with a little or big, you can just fire away, pep talk to our audience, like telling them, making sure everyone knows why it matters so much to never stop believing in whatever goal you're chasing or have, like, whatever vision you have for yourself. And yeah, to keep working on accomplishing that for yourself.
Wow, pep talk. Yeah, I would say to all the members of the team that you're not alone. You're not in this fight alone. And I'm here telling you this and saying that even if I don't know you, I'm in your corner and I'm rooting for you. And just that you know that there's always someone rooting for you. And when you see those obstacles in front of you, you can think that you can do it and that you will do it. And base that on the power of the fact that there are people rooting for you all over the world. Everywhere, people listening to this podcast, me, Lisa, you got this.
Oh my God, you're so sweet. Perfect ending to this episode. Thank you so much, Crystal.
Thank you.